Welcome to the sixth United We Stand podcast of the season. It's the day after the Wigan game, and I'm in the centre of Manchester with Gary Whelan. Gary is the drummer from the Happy Mondays, he's a Salford lad, and is a lifelong Manchester United fan and United We Stand reader as well. Gary, welcome.
Thanks, Andy.
What have you made of United so far this season?
A bit mixed, really. I don't think we've really got going. Yesterday looked a little bit more like it was getting a bit more like we should be, but a bit frustrating.
So you've supported United all your life. What are your earliest memories? Who were your childhood heroes in Salford?
You know who my childhood hero was, really? You're probably going to laugh at this. Was Willie Morgan. Because I played right wing, and I went to see United when it was... My dad took me when he was two, in the late 60s, 1969, 70 when I was two. And Georgie Best, obviously, and I saw Georgie Best play, but I obviously can't remember it. But by the time, 74, when I would have been about 7 or 8, I remember Willie Morgan was kind of my hero because he played the same position as me.
And you used to go to games on a regular basis?
Yeah, my dad took me from the age of two, but I don't remember much. But then with my first full season as a ticket holder in K-Stand with my dad would have been 74. And I can't remember what the first game would have been. I really can't remember the first game I ever went to.
Oh, interesting times to watch United, mid-70s. What do you remember about the atmosphere as a kid?
Oh, the atmosphere was great. It was madness, completely different than what it is today. And scary. And I remember just being... It was a bit weird. It's been like almost like being on a building site or something. You're a little kid in the stands and there's all these grown men swearing and drinking and coming out with hilarious comments. I used to... I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. It was entertaining as the games.
Did you like the songs?
I probably can't remember what much of the songs were in them days. About Jim Holton, I probably remember. I can't really remember that much.
So there was no early musical influences from Old Trafford?
Not from football, no.
Who were you into music-wise as a kid?
When I was a kid? Well, that age. You know, I didn't really get into music properly till about... So it was probably 9 or 10, 77, 78. Sex Pistols was the first kind of band I got into. That got me into music.
And you were still got a United. Did you used to behave yourself when you went to match?
Yeah, of course. I'm not a fighter or anything, someone calls. A lot of friends I grew up with were. So I got caught in a few situations a couple of times. I think it was Newcastle I got hit by a truncheon off a policeman once, caught on my head open. And when I was about 10 or 11, I was in the K-Stand, and I think we was playing Everton. And I got thrown out about 20 minutes to go for swearing off a steward. And as I left the ground, I was crying because I was only young. And a Scottish accent asked me what I'd been thrown out, and I said because I was swearing. And he said, "Oh, follow me, son." There's an old Scottish guy with about five or six henchmen with him. And they walked me round to near the Stretford, where the Stretford end, Connor Paddock would meet the United Road. And he knocked on the door, and this old man let me in. And the old man said to the guy, "Let me in." "No, thanks very much, Matt. So obviously, I said, "Who's that?" He said, "Oh, it's Matt Busby." But I didn't even know. I just got shivers down my spine. I have shivers down my spine thinking about it now to this day.
So you got thrown out of Old Trafford for swearing.
And Matt Busby
got you back
got me back in, yeah. Told me not to swear again. I was too young to swear.
So you go to United throughout your teens. When did the sort of music start to take over?
That's when I stopped going, really. When around about 1989, 90, when we was touring a lot and going around the world.
And how did the band come about originally?
It started in about... When we started in 82, I was still at school and the two Ryder brothers are older. They were like... I was 15, they were like 18 and 20. And Mark Dave's the old one, but he's a City fan, don't talk about him.
And the two Ryder brothers, they're not in the football.
But kind of where we grew up, in Swinton, where the Ryder brothers grew up as well, it's kind of like, if you were into football, you were just a United fan. Everyone was a United fan. You know, I remember going to the 76 Cup Final against Southampton. And I remember leaving in the morning in my dad's Ford Capri. We left about 6 o'clock in the morning. I remember the whole street completely decked out with flags. It was like, you know, remember the whole street, every house, you know. And there was only, in the old street, I think there was like 800 houses, and there was only two families that were City fans. So everyone, like, the Riders would just be United fans, but not know anything about the game or goal, you know.
And Bez?
Well, Bez grew up in Worsley. Bez was a United fan, but it was kind of just, it didn't go. It wasn't like, you know, I think he started going around about the late 90s, he started going more. But I think he'd go now and again with his friends. It was more of a day out, an excuse to party for Bez rather than interest in the football.
So the band took off and it became very successful. That must have been a massive buzz.
It was surprising. We didn't expect it. It's not what we were aiming for. But I tell you what, it must be like these footballers. As soon as you make it, you forget about when you didn't make it really quickly. You come accustomed to it very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, you do. You don't. It's not like, oh, what am I doing? I mean, you know, I'm playing a big stadium. You adapt really quickly.
So what were the highs when you're becoming part of sort of Manchester scene, weren't you?
I don't know. Well, it's weird about the Manchester scene because people talk about it, you know. Like, we were away all the time.
You know, touring.
So we didn't really see it, you know. Someone said to me the other day, this is the honest truth, a couple of years ago, said, what about any other bands from that baggy era? And I went, what does baggy mean? I didn't even know what he meant. Cause I wasn't around. I didn't see any journalists, you know, in England. I didn't really see much. So we were too busy around the world.
There are stories which place the Happy Mondays in the Hacienda.
Yeah.
Did you go there a bit?
Oh, all the time, yeah. But the only reason we went in the Hacienda was because we got in free, because it was on Fletch Records, and we could get a takeaway, and they paid for our taxi home. It went on our record label bill. So we used to be bin bags full of beer going off. So that's the only reason. And it was like our local pub. I've never been into nightclubs, never been into clubs, but that was a different era.
What was the Hacienda like to explain to United fans too young and never went?
You know, early on, I think the first time I went was about 84. No, it'd been 83. The Riders took me. And I think I'd just left school and it was empty, it was cold. It was a few students in there. They were playing electronic hip-hop from New York, which was great. Mike Picker was DJing. But it was empty, and then they played a bit of space, and then there'd be the gay nights, but then it completely changed in the about 86, 87. Completely changed, and then obviously Ecstasy came on board, and I was, it was kind of never mind. I was, alcohol was always my poison. But when Ecstasy came, it just completely changed my life, and it was, even to the point of one, we was at a game once, I used to go with Manny a few times, but I went, I can't remember who was with this time, and for some reason it was in the Warwick Road. And we played a game, and we'd been up all night, we'd had another one, but we had, we was under the influence. And the away team scored. And I kind of started clapping and stood up and went, great goal. And so everyone was looking at me, because obviously it was United fan, I was cheering, when United were on the attack. And I was like, and so they all looked at me and went, what? It was a great goal, appreciate it, and it kind of took out, I was so loved up, I was, appreciating the opposition's goals. Ridiculous.
I hope it wasn't Liverpool.
It wasn't anything like that. No, it was nothing like that. But that, and the same with that, we spend a lot of time in Liverpool when you're in bands, with Liverpool musicians and all that. So I haven't really got a deep-rooted hatred of Liverpool. I really haven't. And I think it's a bit like, I think United and Liverpool are the two old matriarchal clubs of England, like Barca and Madrid. So I think Barca and Madrid might not admit it, but underneath it all, they might have some kind of respect for each other. They probably won't like to admit it, but they probably have got some respect going on there.
Yeah, I think most United fans would respect that Liverpool. They don't like them, but they respect that they're a proper club with a great history.
Well, exactly.
And they're well supported, and they've got more in common than they probably care to admit.
They have, and I've got a lot of friends in Liverpool through music, just have, and Liverpool. So I don't. So I respect Liverpool. Whereas City, I've got absolutely no respect for. You know what I mean? But Liverpool, I have. So I've not got this hatred of Liverpool. I really haven't. Though I do. They are the enemy, but I don't hate them. Like with Peter Ruton, he's an old friend, I don't...
Yeah.
We can talk about football,
Well, Pete was a guest on this very podcast a few weeks ago, and 90% of the feedback from United fans was very positive, but you have 10% who were like, why are you interviewing a Scouser?
Oh, that's, that's nonsense. It's all football, isn't it? Without rivalries and finding out what the other one, what the other one's opinions are, there's no point. What's the point? There's no rivalries. What's the point of football? No, I've got a few friends. Pete Wiley's a Liverpool fan, and we tweet back about the games. In fact, in his house, he had a picture of Cantona on the back of his door, even though he hates United, he's a Liverpool fan.
Well, Peter, the first time I saw him, and I've known him now over 20 years, he walked on the stage in the Academy in Manchester with a George Best T-shirt on. And I thought, for a match-going Liverpool fan, and he's a proper lad, Peter, he goes all the games, and I've seen him at Anfield, everyone knows who he is.
He sings a song for Everton in the FA Cup final,
I know, but he still gets hammered for that. Now, he's got like his argument where he says why he did it, and he also says, and Barrow also used it for their FA Trophy final, right. It's not just there.
Well, Keith is an Everton fan, isn't he?
And United play Liverpool, obviously, this weekend. Yeah. United are absolutely terrible at Anfield.
We have been recently, haven't we? Maybe we should put the black kit on. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be... I think Liverpool are probably... It's the worst Liverpool team I can ever remember. And I think they have definitely fallen. I think there's no way back for them for a long time. Without being rude, they're kind of the new Aston Villa, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I think... Did Peter even tell you the story, the George Best story about the video?
No.
It's a great story. They were doing a video for one of the singles, and George Best was in the video. I don't know which video it is.
This was The Farm?
The Farm. Yeah. And he said to him, I'll stand on the goal line and I'll take a corner and I'll score. to the other goal line. So there's this gap because we had the keyboard player for the farm ended up in the Mondays for a while. He's now in Noel Gallagher's band. Posh Ben, but he's not a football fan. And he said they also on the goal line, and he took the corner and first shot straight in above their heads. So straight in, first goal. And they said they loved him, absolutely loved him. And he's a great United player of all time.
Yeah. Who else were you?
You know what? Obviously Scholes. Giggs, I grew up in the same area, played for the same youth team as him, etc.
Ever come across Giggs?
Yeah, yeah, no, he's my cousin's his best friend, a guy called Grimmy. Do you know Grimmy? He's Ryan's best friend there, and he stays at my auntie's all the time. So yeah, but my brother, my younger brother's more friends with Ryan because he's a bit younger than me. But I saw him when I played for Deans when I was younger.
I used to play against Deans.
Did you play for Flixton United?
No, played for Stretford. Victoria Boys in Stretford.
Vicks, the Army Barracks.
No, the Vicks. There's two teams in Stretford. Stretford Vicks were the better established ones.
All right.
But we used to play Deans over in Swinton, so we crossed the canal. I didn't know you played for Deans.
Oh, sorry, my dad was a manager, coach there. Yeah, that Deans.
I played against Ryan loads of times.
Have you?
Yeah, he always said this before, but I played as a right back and I was probably the worst player in a very good side. And he just destroyed me every time.
He was good when he was little. I mean, I remember when, because obviously it was him and Grimmy, my cousin, Stuart, who was the same age. My dad, I played for him for years. In my team, the only one that went on to be, for a couple of months to play in Germany was a guy called Andy Kilner.
Andy, yeah.
And he was left winger. I was right wing and he was left wing.
Andy's still around. He's working as a football agent now.
Is he?
Yeah.
But his dad and his still brother John was a goalkeeper for Preston. So your dad looked like Brian Clough, used to go come to the games.
Andy went to Sweden. He's played in years for Sweden.
Yeah. I know he ended up managing Stockport, but he was in my team. The group went, and the year above me, the team above me at Deans, he was a guy called Gary Jackson, who played for City. And then he went to Belgium and Torquay. Now he's back in Manchester now, but he had a crucial knee injury.
Belgium, Sweden. How many kids in Salford grow up thinking, I'm going to play in Belgium or Sweden? And there's two Salford lads at the moment. Mark Howard, just been playing in Denmark, and Adam Eckersley. Adam played one game for United, and they make a good living as professional footballers in Denmark.
Who's George's best friend who he took over, who ended up playing in the American League with him? He's still there now as a coach in California. I can't remember his name. When he went over, he took him with him because he was his best friend. And he was, I think he played.
Yeah, I know. He was at his funeral. He was talking at his funeral, and a lot of people didn't know who he was. Musically, one of your biggest champions was a United fan, Tony Wilson.
Yeah, Tony's a big United fan, yeah. It was all, everything was down to Tony, because when we were playing at the time, obviously we didn't, it was the 80s, early 80s, and we'd got, bizarrely enough, we got offered a few record deals, a contract off major labels, which was really surprising considering the kind of music we was making, and Sean not being a pop music singer. And they also said, you've got to change your image, you've got to start looking like fucking Nick Kershaw, can I swear?
Well, you've just sworn, so we'll just carry on. It's all right.
You're Nick and all this, and we were like, you're having a laugh, aren't you? They go, you need an image. He's like, no, we don't need an image. And Tony saw us and spotted what we was about, and Mike Pickering, City fan, funny enough, signed us, him and Tony. And Tony always, because at Factory Records, I think everyone was a little bit against us. You know, we weren't your typical factory band and stuff, and I think they were a bit worried about us. I think our image goes,
You thought you were Scallies?
Yeah, but we weren't more Scallies than anybody else. We weren't that bad. It was, honestly, we really weren't. We really weren't. It was like, and they were a bit worried about us, but Tony always, he wouldn't say anything because Tony would always champion us all the time.
So where the songs, that Pills and Frills album, songs like Kinky Afro, Step On and all them, you were part of the writing process for all them?
Well, Step On's the cover, but all the others we wrote, yeah. Yeah, we used to write it in a little rehearsal room in Cheetham Hill. Across the road from Jolly Roger Chippy behind the banks, this little room that New Order had, and we wrote most of the albums there. We'd write them, and Sean would come in, sit on the floor. This was before, before modern technology, back in the 80s, and we'd just play over and over and over again. And it's like, he'd literally write lyrics and sing. It could take 5-6 hours without stopping playing, which is good because we learned how to play,
When you were successful, you went to the Caribbean to record an album.
Yeah.
I've read lots of stories about that. Are they exaggerated? Is it true? The way that it's told is you had a fistful of dollars, you went over there and to record an album which never got recorded.
We recorded most of the album. The vocals weren't done, only on a couple of tracks. We did the vocals in England, but It was chaos, it was madness, but we got lots of work done.
Why was it madness? Why was it chaotic?
Because we got there and...
Jamaica was this?
No, Barbados of all places. Yeah. We got there and I was on the wagon. Yeah. I was just smoking a local herb at the time, so I was quite mellow. Sean had taken his medicine because he'd come off heroin, and Paul. But he'd smashed it at the airport, so we found out that it was crack central, so they were off doing crack. It was an absolute nightmare. But I was in the studio most of the time. My wife came over. I was just smoking the local herbs, so I was fine. I didn't, you know. And it was, I think we wrote about 9 cars off. It was madness, but the roads were very bad. But there was some, you know, there was...
So, 9 cars, bad?
There was one, yeah, he was, and Bez turned a Jeep over on his head and slashed his arm into pieces. It was just a bit of a mad time. It was... But it wasn't, you know, when we used to go to places, whether we'd tour in the world or Europe, usually it'd be probably people who was with us. And trouble would follow us. We would never. I think people have this misconception that we'd bounce into a town, it would be loud, and we couldn't have been the opposite. We were very quiet, discreet. But trouble used to, like, we had a couple of hotel room fires, but that was best falling asleep with cigs or whatever, you know. They're pressing America, they burnt an hotel down. We didn't, you know, and you know, there was a couple of
hotel room fires.
Yeah, you know, and things got trashed and broke, but they were accidents. We would never throw a TV out. We'd never do all that cheesy rock and roll stuff. Never. And just trouble followed us. It just happened to... Things happened around us. And
just by magic?
I don't know, it's just like... See, I never did that. When I was 17, 18, I never went to Spain or anywhere with my friends on them, you know, groups of lads. I've never done that.
Because you were always in the band.
And that's what... So that was our kind of time of, you know, and doing
adolescence.
That. Yeah, and being a bit silly. But we never did anything... You know, people think we went around robbing players. We didn't. Nothing couldn't be further than the truth, but just young lads going out drinking, partying. Things happened, you know.
Where were the best places you played at? And what was it like?
You know what? I think the Maracan in Rio was probably one of the best. We did a festival there, and it'd been storms all weekend. It was 200,000 people. And we'd supposed to play the night before, and we didn't end up playing the night of, I think, Aha were headlining. They were huge over there. And we went on stage and we didn't really know who it was. And it was a bit... And then the heavens opened. And whenever the heavens opened, all the bands left the stage. It's dangerous, obviously. But we were at off our nuts, so we carried on playing and the crowd appreciated it. So they stayed. So we just had this old set and there was electric shocks going off everywhere and we were completely, you know, oblivious to it all. And we loved it. And that, just turning the gig around like that, that was one of the...
200,000 people in the Maracanã.
Yeah.
And what's it like being a rock star and going to places like Brazil? What are the girls like? What's the local attention like? Well, most people will never experience it.
Yeah, but you know, we don't get, you know, we're an ugly bunch. We don't, you know, we're not, and it wasn't, we'd get more lads following us whenever we went. You know, we'd end up, you know, wherever we were in Oslo or, you know, Buenos Aires, we'd meet the local lads and we'd be out with the lads. It was never really...
Football lads?
I would always, you know, I always want to find out about the local football, about, you know, why someone supported Boca, why someone supported River Plate, you know, and why in the areas and all that. That was fascinating. So, yeah, so we never really had the groupie thing. That really never really existed in our camp, never.
So you'd be on tour. How would you keep in touch with Manchester United?
Well, in them days, it was difficult. You know, in the 80s and 90s, it was difficult. I mean, I remember we'd finished the Cup Winners' Cup final against Barcelona in Rotterdam. I can't remember what year that was. What year?
91.
I remember I'd got a ticket for it and I was getting back and I got a flight to London. We just finished an American tour. Got a flight to London, I got a flight to Amsterdam. The flight to London was delayed and I got to Amsterdam. Around about the time the kickoffs, ended up watching it in a bar in Amsterdam. And I couldn't wait for it. If it had been mobile phones and such, then I'd have been able to arrange it and get there, you know, otherwise. So it was difficult. And, you know, TV, you try and find any TV abroad that was playing it. I remember we did, I think it was V-Fest. I can't remember what year that was. That was probably 2001, 2 or something. And we had a satellite dish on our Skybot satellite dish so we could watch United Arsenal. And funny enough, Sol Campbell came and watched it with us, and Sol Campbell, but I think he was at Tottenham then, because he was Roletta was winding him up. I think it was Sol Campbell and Armstrong. Remember Armstrong? They played for Palace, and
yeah,
but he was Welsh, I think. He was from Wrexham. He was on his band for, remember that smoking thing, and he was a great guy. Sol Campbell was all right, but so we used to work, so we'd have a satellite dish. That's when Sky started, obviously.
That made it easier with the internet and stuff like
but
that.
But it was only really me that was bothered about watching the game. And Neil Maver, who was our tour manager then, he's a huge Red.
You said 91, Rotterdam, May 91. About 3 weeks after that, I got a coach to watch you play at Ellen Road in Leeds.
Oh, yeah. Was that then?
That was then. And cold coach loads of people were going over from Manchester. You were headlining, the farm were supporting you.
Yeah, fantastic.
And someone climbed up their massive floodlights at Ellen Road.
Mm.
I always remember Sean walking on stage, Sean Ryder, and saying, "Are you Man U, you?"
"Are you Man U, you?" Yeah.
And all the Leeds people went absolutely mad because it was a football saying.
Yeah, I don't know if Sean even knew that.
Yeah, so he's got it from somewhere though, hasn't he?
He heard it around, yeah. He picks things up, you know. He obviously, for lyricists, he soak everything up, don't he? He'd obviously heard it, he picked it up.
So he thought he'd try it out on 30,000 Yorkies.
Yeah, he always does things like that, yeah. Same. But Leeds was one of the first places where we got. It's the irony was, the first places we'd sell out gigs would be Leeds, Blackburn, and London. But we couldn't, us and the Roses, couldn't get airplay in Manchester. The journalists, Mick Middles hated us. They hated us, Man Stephen News, hated us. Couldn't get on the radio then. He was only Tony the Greek who plays at night time. Couldn't get on the radio, nothing. Couldn't get
Tony the Greek, what would he play you on? Which?
What was it? I think he was GMR or Piccadilly, but at night time, like a Saturday night. It was like a late night or a Sunday night. He's like the John Peel of Manchester, weren't he? So no one, we couldn't get played us all the Roses. And then it's funny when we did, it was like, you know, they all jumped on the bandwagon, you know.
Everyone claiming to be watching you since you've been formed.
Couldn't get arrested.
When actually you were bigger in Leeds before you were bigger in Manchester.
We were bigger in London before we were bigger in Manchester. Mm. The irony of it all, you know, and people who say Man U really annoys me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it usually marks out someone who doesn't know from somebody who
it
does.
It really does, yeah. I mean, it's just United with us, you know. And it's like, you know, you know what it's like. I was born less than a mile from the ground across, you know, in Weesay. Grew up in Swinton, and my school was on the playground was on a hill, and we'd overlooked. You could look down Trafford Park, you could see Old Trafford. And you could, you know, you can imagine.
From the heights?
Yeah, from playing. So when I played football in the schoolyard at seven, I could see Old Trafford.
So that was the dream in the future?
Yeah, oh, I always wanted to play for United, but I was going to play for Salford Boys. I did one tour of England schoolboys in Switzerland when I was 14.
What position did you play?
Well, I was always right winger, but I never had the speed. But I, when I went to, it was a weird England schoolboys. It was a fluke thing. What year would it have been? It'd have been 1980. And it was a tournament in Switzerland. And I was pitching the squad, and I was a sub. I only came on now and again. To be honest with you, I don't think I was out of my depth. I don't know how I got picked. And it was only me and a guy from near Liverpool, a scouter, and a Geordie were Norbert. Everyone else was from Norfolk. Suffolk. I'm like, why is everyone from Suffolk? And it was the time when Ipswich was a great team.
Yeah.
And it was Bobby Robson, a guy called Kit Carson, who were running it, who were the coach. And they picked, and he's like, nonsense, dog. Of course they're not the best players. And then that was on my CV for like, I'll get to United. I was Salford Boys, and I never got a trial at United. I had trials at Everton, Crystal Palace. A guy called Harry Godwin at City was trying to get me and my younger brother to play for City for years to go. I couldn't do it.
You never think of playing semi-pro?
And then the band happened, so that's what I was going to do. But then the band happened. I just wanted to play for United.
Salford City are playing FC United this weekend in the FA Cup.
Are they?
Yeah.
I used to go and watch Salford City, actually.
On Moor Lane at the
Moor
top
Lane,
of,
yeah, because my best friend lived at the bottom of that street.
What about United players who've come to your gigs over the years?
You know what? If he did, they kept quite a bit. I mean, I know Ryan's been to a few, and we did a gig at the arena once, and Peter Smichael came back because Lee, our percussionist, was teaching him drums because, you know, Smichael's a musician, his dad was. And he's not the easiest person to get on with Smichael, is he?
No. You know, I used to... I'd say dislike's too strong a word, but I didn't have a high opinion of him when he was at United. Obviously, as a player, as a goalkeeper, he was fantastic. But as a person, he didn't score well on the grapevine. He wasn't popular with a lot of the other players. And he was hard work. And I had a couple of run-ins with him. And then I was recently, I did a job with him in Oslo at a big supporters meeting. And I thought, and Peter Schmeichel was bringing it all together. He was presenting it and everything. And I'd not seen him for 10 years. And he was absolutely spot on. He came up. He said, "Hey Andy, how's the mag doing? How's everything? What's the rivalry like with Liverpool at the moment?" And he was really interested in sort of fan-related questions. And I saw a side of him I'd not seen before. And
it's his age.
When, a lot of footballers, when they retire, they do grow up, they do become real people, they do go into the real world, they step out of the bubble that they've been in. And he was a pleasant person to be around. He was with us all night, he was drinking away, he was good company. I would never have said that would have happened before the weekend. Oh. So it's funny how people do change.
You know, what my opinion, he gave me a blue, bizarrely, but when he gave me a pair of goalkeeping gloves, and my parents had it in the kitchen on the wall in Swindon, in a frame, Sandika red gloves signed to Schmeichel. And then when he signed for City, my dad ripped him down and binned him. And I was like, and it's funny because some players, when they go and sign for City, it tarnishes them, doesn't it? And it didn't with Dennis Law. It didn't really with Brian Kidd.
Sammy Mack got a lot of abuse.
Sammy Mack, yeah.
City, but not off United.
I like Sammy Mack, and he was kind of that era as well. So, but
Andy Cole at first got a lot of stick off City. As soon as he worked his knot off and started scoring goals, they were fine with him. It's hard to go from one directly to the other.
Well, I never welcomed Peter Barnes. But what did it for me with Schmeichel? I was away somewhere, and I got the radio on. I don't know what channel it was, and he was commentating, and it was a Derby game. And he kept saying, "We've got to do this, we've got to do that, we've got to do this." And I just presumed he was talking about United. And they said, "If we don't, United are going to score." And I was like, and I just lost it. I was like, what do you mean, we? And he'd retired by then. And I was like, well, what do you mean, we? And that for me, did it for me, and I was done with him. You know.
A few people in Oslo had objected to the way that he celebrated the City goal in the derby and actually pulled him up on it. And he was, like, a bit defensive about it. So he called it wrong, completely got that wrong.
Well, he didn't want the pressure yet. He went, I don't know what was going on with him. A bit funny, I went to his first game for Sporting Lisbon. He was out in Lisbon when he played. And he was they had like a friendly game, one game they introduced all the players and went to that game. That was a good experience. That was a great game. But we met Vidic in a bar. Where was that? It's in Belgrade. We was doing a gig in Belgrade, and wasn't Ian Brown were doing it, and I was going out. I said to Ian Brown, "Come, let's go out for a drink." He said, "Well, you don't drink, Ian Brown." I said, "I'm not drinking." I said, "Oh, I'm only having a couple, you know." And he didn't come. We went to the bar, and Vidic was there. It was an international break. He was playing, and he was absolutely phenomenal. What struck me was how good his English was. Well, yeah, he'd give us a mobile and everything. He was lovely, but I've never, he was on my old phone. I was too scared to call him. So when you're back in Manchester, we had a guy called Salts who looked after us. Salts knows everyone, and Salts was like, yeah, speaking to him, yeah, we'll meet up. And I thought, Salts probably does. I was too scared to call him. He was lovely. He was really, really nice. And he couldn't come to the gig because they was doing their international game was the day after when we were doing the show. It was a big festival. He was lovely.
Yeah, and a great player.
Amazing player. It's difficult, United, at the moment. It's like, I still think we're a couple of players short.
Who'd you like?
Who would I like to have signed?
Who'd you like in the team?
At the moment, you know, really, really, really rate the things on the rate. Smalling. I really rate Smalling. I loved him at right back as well. I really rate Smalling.
You were always popular in Japan. The Mondays played a few times over there.
Yeah, everyone's popular in Japan, I think. Yeah, I've done loads. I've spent a lot of time in Japan. Yeah.
Kagawa, obviously, is the first player. He's looking decent.
He's looking good, isn't he? He's looking. Anyone that does well in the Bundesliga, though, is going to do well in the Premier League, aren't he? Would have thought.
For the German champions, you know.
Yeah,
exactly. Not a small Bundesliga team.
Yeah, they're the biggest supported team in Europe.
Well, the ground holds 80,000 and it's full most weeks. So the last 3 years, United, Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund have all been the top supported team in Europe. They're all about the same, between 75 and 80,000. But Borussia reduced their capacity because they have to put seats in for European games, so that brings it down. So when they play City, it'll be 65,000 there.
How did they do last year, Borussia?
No, they were the champions.
Again?
Yeah. So
it's tough for City, isn't it?
And Kagawa, I'm going to Dortmund in a few weeks to do something about. They've got the biggest terrace in Europe. It holds 24,000. And I said to the person I was dealing with, and by the way, thanks for Kagawa. And she just went, no, we miss him. And I bet you did.
Who's their derby team?
Borussia would,
is it Leverkusen?
No, it's Schalke.
Schalke,
two huge clubs in the Ruhr region.
Right.
And they hate each other, and they're both massively well supported. Because Schalke fill their ground most weeks, and that holds 60,000.
Wow.
But in that sort of Ruhrgebiet area, got several big clubs. It's like the German equivalent of Manchester, Liverpool, Leeds.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
It's a big sort of former industrialised area. Cologne's not far off it, Leverkusen, Essen, but the two biggest teams by a distance are Schalke
and
Dortmund. There's not a lot of things to do in Dortmund apart from the football team.
Yeah, no, it's not a big place.
I've heard similar said about Manchester, and I don't think that's fair because I think Manchester's a good city. Yeah. What did you make of the Roses getting back together? Did you see them? Are you friends with any of the lads?
Friends with them, yeah, but I've not seen them for a while. Friends with me and Paul Ryder, good friends with Manny and Ian. So Manny and Ian are really
they're into United, aren't they?
Big into United, yeah.
Ian's had season tickets for a few years now.
Yeah, Ian's a good lad. Manny goes all the time.
Yeah.
So they're the two who we've always been close to. John Squire, I don't know, it's a lot on with. I've been to one game with him years ago with Manny at United. He's very quiet, nice lad. Rennie, he's a City fan, so, you know.
Yeah.
Ian Brown and Manny are the ones who we hang around with.
So we're quite near the end now. What are your plans for the future musically?
Got a new album. We're just writing a new album at the moment.
Any good?
Yeah, you know what? It's Rowetta came in to do some vocals, and she said it's the best stuff we've done for years. I know every band says that.
Yeah.
But it really is. It's genuinely some of the best stuff I've heard. When you're doing an album, you know whether. You know, you can kid yourself, which you do a lot of the time, but you know, and it is, it's really, I think people are going to be very surprised.
What sort of sound is it?
It's weird, it's kind of developing its own, it's not a developed one yet, it's hard to say, it's quite left field.
And all the lads are involved, everyone's back together?
Yeah, me, Paul Ryder, Mark, writing with Dan, who's our programmer. Sean's writing with someone else, so we'll bring it together and then we'll make these tunes. We've got some tune songs. Sean's already sung on. But really, I can't wait. We're hoping to have it out in May. I really can't wait because it's going to be. I'd be highly surprised if it doesn't get good reviews because it is really good, and it's not what people expect.
You're not putting the vocals down in Barbados?
No, we're going to do it all here. No, it's probably not a good idea. The good thing about the Mondays is if you've got a good lyricist, you generally will get good reviews because journalists might not know music, but what they do know is words. So, you know, if you've got good lyrics, you're halfway there.
And what else? You said something about walking, climbing volcanoes.
Yeah, so you've got to go and sponsor me. It's justgiving.com, Garrett-Whelan.
And what would people be sponsoring you for?
Right, what I'm doing
is... And which volcanoes are you climbing?
Right, there's a place in near Lynn called at Adventure Farm on Twitter, Adventure Farm. It's a children's adventure farm for children with terminal illnesses and severe disabilities. And it's an amazing place, and it gets no government funding. And it blew me away when I went, so I said I'd agreed to do this volcano walk, which is in 3 weeks' time, where I walk up Vesuvius, just outside Naples, Stromboli, which is an island just off Sicily, and then about Etna in Sicily, and they're all highly active. And I don't like fire, and I don't like heights, so it should be fun. But I'm going to go and see a couple of grounds. I'm going to go and see the San Paolo in
Naples.
Yeah, because I love Italian football, and then a couple of grounds in Sicily.
Yeah. Try and see a game.
Italian football is a passion. I love it as much as I love the Premier League.
Just tell us your Just Giving address again.
So it's justgiving.com/ Gary-Whelan. Anything, you know, a couple of quid, anything, just go and sponsor me. It's dead easy. Go on there. It's all secure. It's Just Giving, it's a secure site. And just.
So finally, you're confident of United this season?
Do you know what? I don't know. It depends on Powell, if Powell's going to be... It's just that centre midfield that everyone says.
He scored a good goal yesterday. He's only young. The manager was raving about him after the game.
He looked good. And, you know, he looked good, but we'll see. I don't know. It's just that
centre
midfield.
As did the left back.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
He reminds me a little bit of Hines in a kind of strange sort of way.
He was raw, as the manager said, but he's definitely got somewhere and he's bombing forward. I think everyone might have his work cut out.
Yeah, I do. Well, everyone ever came. He's one of the best left-backs in the world and he's not been great form, has he, recently?
No.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe you need some players for some tough games like that. I don't know. I'm up. You know what? I'm never always optimistic about United. I'm always I always worry about. I remember my dad saying to me when I was a kid, you know, I remember saying to my dad walking home one game from the game, I remember saying to him, it's a 74 season, Dad, I can't believe that my local team is Man United, my local club is Man United. And he said, we're in the second division. I said, no, but my local club's Man United, as opposed to, you know, Hartlepool or something, you know, no disrespect to them, but you know what I'm saying. And he said, they always do everything the hard way. They never do anything the easy way. And they don't, do they? And I'll never forget him saying that. And he said,
Barcelona, Moscow on penalties.
Well, the worry thing about it is, it's, you know, what, to get closer to Barcelona. We're further away from Barcelona. We don't play that type of football, do we?
I think he's looking at that. The manager's looking at that way of playing. So predict where United will finish this season and where City will finish.
I think it's obvious. I think it's going to be one and two. But I just don't know. I think we might nip it this season. I mean, Van Persie is obviously an amazing signing. It's like, you know, oh, it's about his age. He's only just recently turned 29. He's got another two or three good years in him at his peak. I think, you know, you peak between the age of, as a striker, 27 and 31, 32. So I think that's going to be a massive help. My only worry is we've always had two great wingers, which we've got now. I think Tony V is amazing. Nan is frustrating because we know what he's capable of. You know, skill-wise, he's one of the best in the world. But we've always had a great central midfielder. It's Bobby Charlton, Brian Robson, Roy Keane, and we haven't got, and we suffer from that. Like, City have always had a great goalkeeper. We've always had a great centre midfielder, and we just haven't. It just worries me.
I'd like to thank you for your time.
No, anytime, it's a pleasure.
Good luck.
Talk about United all day and night.
Good luck with the new album.
Yeah, cheers.
And maybe when it comes out, we'll get you back on.
Oh, I'd love to come back on, definitely.
With Bez in the background, shaking maracas.
I'll get Bez to come and roll, and I'll come and talk. She's good.
She's a United fan as well, isn't she?
She's got a big crush on Alex Ferguson. She has, yeah, she's a big red, yeah.
So that's it for this United We Stand podcast. Thanks very much to Gary Whelan for his time. We'll be back next week when we'll talk about the game against Galatasaray and also Liverpool away. It is hoping that United turn up at Anfield and don't get beat or not win, like seems to have become the norm in the last few years. United We Stand 220 is out against Galatasaray at Old Trafford. And if you're not going to a match and you want to subscribe, either for a printed edition or an electronic edition to read on your tablet, your PC, your iPad or whatever, then go to uwsonline.com. It only takes you 2 minutes and you can do it from there. Plenty of people have already done that. Until next week, goodbye.